go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 59 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Yes, I am wearing the same t-shirt I did in a previous episode, 58. That's because I'm recording episodes back-to-back because I'm going to the Yankee game this Saturday, so I'm trying to condense my schedule. I'm going to the game with the boys on Saturday. Saturdays are for the boys. That's something I can say, but not a priest, for obvious reasons. Still doing the dog sitting. Not going to say the dog's name because he's sleeping right now on a blanket. Don't want to rile him up. I want to give myself a little pat on the back. Reason being is I'm an uncle. I'm the youngest of five. I don't have any children of myself, but I am an uncle five times over. Number four is on her way to college right now. And I want to give myself a pat on the back because of my five nieces and nephews. I have not touched any of them. I am a non-diddler. I know that's odd thing to be proud of, but I'm proud of that. Not that there was ever an urge, but there is a, you know, there is a stereotype with the drunk Irish Catholics. I'm not so much a drunk, not so much a Catholic, but I would describe myself as a drunk Irish Catholic uncle. And that the fact that I have not touched any of my nieces or nephews or any kids at all, that makes me a unicorn. There is a reason why I don't get booked in Boston. It's because I am an oddity. I am one of the Irish Catholics, have not gone down that path. I am very proud of myself. If you look at me and my sense of humor and some of the literature I read, you might suspect that I am a diddler of kids. I am not, and I am very proud of that. I feel as though I should be given a medal or some type of plaque that I could put on my wall so that when people come visit the studio, they know I am not a diddler, nor have I ever. Very proud of that. Yes, odd thing to be cheering myself on for, but that is a... brings up another topic. It's always frustrated me, the aunt, how do you pronounce that? I say aunt, the aunt who is too into being an aunt. Like, she'll identify herself as an aunt, reason being because she doesn't have children of her own. I always found that to be a little off-putting, a little... It never sits right with me when someone will go on social media and brag about what a great aunt they are, about how they buy all these presents, how they go, they bring their nieces and nephews to the water park and to the ball games and to the ice rink and they get ice cream together. It's like, dude, why? You're the failure in the family. You're the sister who could not lock down the guy. You're the lady, the sister who could not... whose eggs didn't work or you couldn't fuck properly. Your other sister, she's the success. She's the one who could brag about her family, and you're trying to leech off of her success. That's what doesn't sit right with me. So all these ladies, all you babes who are bragging about being an aunt, I see through that. I see your game. You're a failure. You wish you had a husband. You wish you had kids of your own. Now, hey, if something happened where you can't have kids, I understand. I'm not going to berate you for not having kids. But stop bragging about being an aunt. Because you didn't do anything to brag about. Your sister is the one who did all the work. It was just biology, just the genetics. Like the fact that you're in the same family. That's the only reason why those kids are in your life. Not any action that you took. So that's something... I'm on to you, aunts. All you aunts and uncles who are bragging online, I see right through it, and I'm calling you out for it right here on Verbal Graffiti. Now we're on the topic of family and extended family. Let's talk about friends. What makes a friend? To me, a friend, you're not my friend. You're not a friend of the B-Man until you've seen my balls, my wiener. Until you've seen them, you're not my friend. We'll be friends, but we're not tight. We're not boys. We're not going to Yankee games together. All my best friends, all my day ones, they've seen me naked. When I was younger, I wasn't the guy who would get naked. I was the guy who would be naked. Will you be getting in your car? You get in the driver's side. You know, you start the car up before you drive off. If I was in the parking lot, I'd pull my shorts down and pin my ball sack up against the driver's window as a joke, to make myself laugh. I love showing my wiener off, my Mr. Perfect, to my friends, not to strangers, to friends. And I've seen most of my friends. I've seen them naked. So if I haven't seen you naked. If I haven't seen you naked, I can't call you a friend of mine. Until we get to that point, we're acquaintances, we're friendly, we can be cordial with each other, but we are not friends until we've seen our ball sack hanging. And I got a great ball sack. My ball sack is much better than Mr. Perfect. I want to do steroids. I'm actually interested in doing TRT. Reason being, my body's a little frail, it's in a little bit of pain, so I think the TRT might actually help. I've done some research on Reddit, and one of the side effects of TRT is it will make your balls shrink. And that's actually, other than my eyes, my ball sack's probably the body part I have the most confidence in, so I don't want to ruin that. So I got to find some type of, I'm not going to do a TRT until it doesn't shrink the balls. So does anyone want to be a friend with me? Let me see what you got, and I'll show you what I got, and we'll cheer on the Yankees together. Let's stop being weird and get let's continue to be weird. All right, I found this. Let's transition here to a subreddit, millennials. I think I'm a millennial. 84, born in 1984. Does that make me a millennial? All right, whatever. This comes from our millennial subreddit. So my GF, that'd be girlfriend, told me yesterday that she's finally ready to switch away from Hotmail, .. We've been together for 2 years, and since day one, feel like I've had to make fun of her for still using her Hotmail email address as her primary email for everything. Personally, I didn't even know Hotmail domains still existed, and I thought everyone had migrated over to Outlook for those domains. Anyway, yesterday she told me she's ready to move over everything to Gmail. She was trying to clean up her Hotmail account, which has like 30,000 unread emails, by unsubscribing from the thousand of mailing lists she's probably on, but was a bit fed up with how cumbersome the process is. It's a big step for her, and I'm proud of her for letting go. Ha ha. Anyone else still using Hotmail? And I can't answer for everyone else. For me, the B-Man, I do not use Hotmail. I don't know if I ever had a Hotmail. I think originally maybe I had an AOL account, and then my University of Connecticut college email, and I think from there I went to Gmail. I don't like you. I don't like anything about you and this post. I hope your girlfriend leaves you very quickly. The reason why I don't like you is because you're an emotionally abusive boyfriend. You're chastising your girlfriend for having a Hotmail account. Like, why? You're a girlfriend. What your girlfriend should do is kick you in the balls, and then when you're on the ground screaming in agony and pain and discomfort, she should go to your laptop, open up your Gmail account, change the password, and not tell you what it is, and leave you forever, and leave you to be frustrated on a Sunday afternoon trying to get back into your Gmail account. I had a friend who once did that to me, not the kicking in the balls, but the changing my Gmail account thinking it'd be a fun gag to do. It was not. Still bitter about that. No, I don't understand. I've never Why are you upset that she's using Hotmail? Like, honestly, I'm not a tech guy, but can you tell me why? Why is Gmail so much better at email than Hotmail? Other than, you know, everyone is using Gmail, it's the more prominent one, the more popular one. Like, why is it better than Hotmail? Like if she's getting 30,000 unread emails, clearly emails are still able to get to the Hotmail. So why are you upset with her for having Hotmail? If anything, that makes her unique. It's having a Hotmail account, that's a trait you should want in your partner. See, you're too much of a lollipop to realize that her having a Hotmail account all these years, that shows loyalty. That shows that she's a ride or die bitch through the worst of times. So when you're maybe you're this great guy now, you're using Gmail, you feel like you're at the peak of technology, you're 6'3", but there's going to be a day when you gain weight, you get a beer belly, your pants start to sag, you lose touch with what the fashion is, you lose your job, you have to blow through all your 401k to pay the bills, you're stuck with a mortgage, and your sex drive goes down. And she's going to stay with you because she was a Hotmail girl. Like, she's a loyalty. She's a ride or die bitch. But you've converted her into a Gmail, someone who will go to the latest trend. So when you have your pitfall in life, and that pitfall is coming because it comes for all of us, because life is hard. That's what it's about. It's getting through those tough times. She might just up and leave your hard ass because you taught her that way. So I hope she leaves you because you deserve to be left because you didn't let her keep her email account. Like, honestly, why do you have such a hard on for Google and Gmail? Like, did you write the code for Google? Are you in Silicon Valley? Are you updating the code, getting rid of all the bugs that are in the Gmail coding, whatever the fuck it is? I think not. Like, are you a salesman for Alphabet, Google, for this? Like, why are you pimping out this conglomerate corporate entity that is Google, Alphabet? Like, they don't need your sales pitch. Like, I'm using the word like too much. It's very frustrating to me that you made her change accounts and waste a day going through all her emails that she hasn't read. Clearly, it never upset her to this point. It was only frustrating to you, and you just you each day you emotionally abused her, just peck, peck, peck. Just picked away at her till you made her change. Don't like that. You should have to eat macaroni and cheese every day, every meal, the rest of your life. You don't deserve to have your taste buds fulfilled. What's also bothersome about this is, of all the things, and again, I'm a little bit like you. Like, I do like to pick on babes and try to get them to change who they are to be more what I want them to be. So I do have that trait, which isn't a positive, but I do have it. I'm working on it, babes. But it is part of who, it is part of my. You know, all humans, we're flawed, but. This was wasted energy on your part as the boyfriend, as the lover. What you should have done these 2 years you've been together is picked away at something more meaningful. For example, let's say she's flat-chested. You want her to get a bigger chest. What you should do every day, every week, every meal, every time you were together, every time you were texting, talking on the phone, late night, pillow talking, You should have kept mentioning something about her body. Make her get self-conscious about her chest, about her body, but do it in such a sneaky, sly way that over time, she thinks she's the one questioning her chest, not you critiquing her chest. So do that every day for 2 years to the point where you convince her to get a boob job, but you do so in a way that makes your girlfriend think that she came up with the idea to get the boob job or to get the lip implants or the big butt or the labia retraction or whatever plastic surgery you want your babe to get. That's what you should have been working on these first 2 years. Or another one is, let's say she spends too much time with her family, has dinner every Sunday with the parents and grandparents, and everybody knows you don't like, it's a waste of a Sunday evening having to go to your in-laws' house for a hot meal. You should have just kept pecking away, trying to create distance between her and her family, so that within that 2 year period you were together, that she would excommunicate her family. That way you could have all your time with her, and she would not go see her family on Sunday. And the reason behind all this means you don't have to go to the in-laws on Sunday. So things like that, things that actually could have had a positive impact on her life, but really your life, that's where you should have been doing the mental warfare these first 2 years you were together. But no, you wasted all that energy on an email account, on a domain. AJ, I'm just frustrated because you're wasting your energy. You're inflation of the mind. That's what you are. You're inflating her mind, but not with actual value. And no, I'm not behind you. And honestly, right after I record this episode, I'm going to go make a Hotmail account. I don't know how to end my Gmail, but I'm going to get rid of that. And I'm opening up a Hotmail and adjusting validity against you and what you stand for. So yeah, the B-Man and everyone at Verbal Graffiti watching this, get rid of your Gmail and let's get back on Hotmail or Yahoo or AOL or whatever one was being used in the 90s, early 2000s. Let's go look at some photos. The B-Man, I am a Navy SEAL when it comes to picking up dog poop. I always make sure to walk with doggy bags to pick it up if dogs, you know, go poo. I have this predicament right now, though, and I need some advice to any of you who are dog owners or are dog walkers out there. Maybe you can help me out. Let me know down in the comments. As you know, I'm dog sitting this week watching Maui, who is a golden retriever. I did a major no-no a couple nights ago. I let Maui eat way too many little doggy bones, and now he has a violent projectile. Not so much projectile, just it's dropping really fast, diarrhea. I don't want to get too graphic. I'll describe it as, imagine your lover or somebody you know makes you pudding, but leaves it outside on the deck when it's 90 degrees out and humid, and it turns to mush, and it there's no form to it at all. That's in the same exact color. That's what Maui's diarrhea is like right now. And I'm taking him for walks around the block. I currently live in a residential area, have my doggy bags, but when he squats real low, and it's all coming out. It's diarrhea. And the question I have is, there's nothing for me to pick up with the doggy bag because it's all like liquid seeping into the grass, into the dirt. So I'm kind of doing the thing where I'm taking the bag in case anyone's looking out their window, and I'm kind of doing the fake. I'm doing the pump fake where I'm pretending to pick up something because I'm very self-conscious of what people in my neighborhood think about me, but I'm not picking anything up. So I'm doing the pump fake, pretending I'm staying down there for a handful of seconds, and I'm coming up, giving a peek both ways, and then I kind of give Maui a little nudge, and we keep on walking. But like, there's nothing to pick up. It's not like I have. You know, sometimes when you go to a bar and you have the shavings on the ground, the wood shavings are from eating the peanuts, if you're at a real dive bar, I have nothing of that to cover the diarrhea with. Is there something you can buy, a substance, something you get at a Petco that you can kind of put on top of the diarrhea that will make the grass look okay? I don't know. And you work at a golf course where, you know, sometimes where you have a divot, and there's that little tool where you can kind of pull up the grass, but then put grass on top and even it out. I need a little help. Don't know what to do. It kind of in my head about it. So if any of you have any advice, let me know down in the comments. What is the proper way to deal with a dog diarrhea when he goes diarrhea on a neighbor's lawn or sidewalk? Another thing before we get into this Reddit post that aggravates me, for some reason, the dog diarrhea doesn't really aggravate me. What does perturb me sometimes, though, is when I see a babe, or especially a guy, when I see somebody that you'll be out and they eat with their thumb and their index finger. And let me show you how they do it. They'll pick some food up, some hand food, and they'll open their mouth real wide so that they could stick their thumb and index finger inside their mouth, set the food on their tongue without touching any of their lips so they don't make any mess on their face. I see that. When I see a babe do that, immediately I think, oh, she doesn't like to give head. That is the first thing that comes to my mind. Because if she's that self-conscious about not making a mess of her mouth, of her face, of her chin, there's no way she's giving sloppy top where it's just drool and spit and fluids coming out. That's a bird pecker. That's a girl who's just kind of sucking on the mushroom, but not going all the way down, not being a fiend on your wiener. That's just very... There are certain things that babes will do where instinctively I judge how they are in bed by their actions on the street. Another one being, you ever see a babe with her handbag and then she's got the little 3-ounce hand sanitizer with the little rubber piece, like keychain, and it kind of dangles from her handbag? Right away when I see that, if she's walking with her man, I know she doesn't let that guy eat her ass because she is too self-conscious of genes and health and she doesn't like to get down in the dirt. So she's not someone who's fun to have sex with. Because if you're washing your hands after touching a rail in public or a doorknob, you're not going to shove your face down in the nether regions. You're too in your head about germs to be doing that. That's kind of how my mind operates in public. I see something that someone does, and then I go to the gutter right away. I could tell you I wish my mind didn't work that way, but I do get amusement from it. So I'm actually kind of thankful that my mind is just. All right, let's get into something I found on Reddit. This comes from the subreddit r parallel universe. Feeling like I've been to and experienced certain places in my dreams before, but no memory of dreaming it previously when I'm awake. Okay, I know this sounds super confusing, LOL, laugh out loud. But sometimes when I'm dreaming, I'll be at a certain place where I completely remember being there before. Like it's just a place I fully know and have experienced, but the energy of these places are kind of unsettling. I just get very weird and uncomfortable vibes while there. And while in the dream, I'm thinking I've definitely had this same dream before. But when I wake up and am conscious, I have absolutely no memories of ever dreaming that dream before. It's just like dream me remembers and knows it, but awake me doesn't. Has anyone else experienced this? I sometimes wonder if it's me slipping into a parallel life while I'm asleep in this life. I fuck with you. I fuck with this. I'm trying to get all my thoughts together because I do take dreams seriously. I do think dreams say something about our real life. And when I say real life, that's whatever this awake life is. I All right, let me start with this. The reason why I read this post, it immediately made me think of this recurring dream I've had. Let me explain in detail what this dream is. Try to paint the picture for you. I've had this recurring dream since I was a kid. Let's say age 8, 10, not really sure, but I was young. I was young when I had this for the first time, and I've had it, I don't know, maybe 10 total times in my life. Don't know the exact number, but it's been recurring. I'm in a field alone, and it feels, and when I say field, flat, think plains, think like a vineyard almost, but it's not pleasant, and the grape trees are not there. There's some shrubbage, but it's mostly flat. Think Europe, Italy, you know, waving, but not super hilly. It's a field, and I'm there by myself, and it's conflict. So it's some type of war environment in Europe, but I'm in the field by myself, holding some type of a weapon. Don't know what it is, some type of rifle, gun, firearms type thing, but an older one, you know, not a current one. And I'm in the field, and I'm wearing this regular common person clothing, not military garb, but I'm there, and I'm kind of not running, but not walking either. Just a crisp pace, brisk pace, and I'm kind of wandering, not really know what it is I'm supposed to do, because I don't know where any of my platoon is, if there are any. It's just me there by myself. And then there's a transition in the dream, but not a transition. What I mean by that is I'm in the field, and then immediately I'm in my house. And I'm in the house I grew up with, grew up in as a kid, and I had the same family. So I'm the youngest of five, two parents. But the house isn't, it's the exact same house, but it's not in the same place I grew up. So it's not in Wallingford, Connecticut. It's somewhere in Europe. And I'm in the house, and I'm calling for my family, calling for my parents, calling for my sisters and my brother, and nobody's there. All the lights are out. And as I'm calling out for each family member, mom, dad, and my brothers and sisters' names, I get no answer. And as I, every time I call out a name with no answer, the panic, the anxiety, like in my state of sleep, it rises, it increases. And I start searching the house. Think of footage of like the Iraq war where the Marines bust down a door and they're going from room to room looking to see if there's anybody hiding in the rooms in the corners. That's kind of what I'm doing. Now, it's not as violent. It's me. It's more just since it's my house, I'm able to open all the doors. I don't need to bust any of them down. But all the lights are out. But it's not dark, so it's got to be like a golden hour before sunset, that time period of the day or evening, and I find nobody, and I start to panic, and when nobody answers me, and I get through the house, and the panic is at an all-time high, that's when I wake up in a deep sweat. And usually when I had this dream, I'm in a deep sweat, which is not uncommon for me. I get that a lot. But I just shoot right up like the Undertaker, right? Where he lays down and he rises up. Like that's what I do when I wake up from this dream. And I've had this dream, yeah, like I said, maybe 10 times throughout my life, maybe more. And what I take away from this dream is that I believe in reincarnation. I truly believe that I lived a previous life. And in that life, I had the same family, but we were living somewhere in Europe during a period of conflict, and something happened to the rest of my family. That's the reason why they weren't in the house. And since I was alone on the field and alone in my house, like I've convinced myself that in this real world that I'm living in, again, this awake world, that I'm going to die alone, that I am meant to be alone, that I'm never going to find a lover that's going to be with me, and that probably most of my family is going to die before I do, probably somehow tragically, all because of this reoccurring dream I have. So that's what I believe. So I do believe in reincarnation. I've also had another dream. Now, this one is, okay, my dad died a little over 10 years ago. And I say the word died. Like, my dad is dead. A lot of people use they'll avoid using that word. Oh, my loved one passed away or no longer with us. No, I'm not going to, dead. My dad is dead. But and towards the end, he was not doing well. He lost all dominion over his body. We had to take care of him. He was in a very frail state. So this dream I have, and I've had this dream, again, a handful of times since my dad has died, where he'll be at our local high school in a cadaverous state, just very, again, very frail, and he's in a gurney. So he's in an EMT, you know, when the ambulance comes to your house, an emergency, like one of those gurneys, he's in that, but it gets lifted up, and it's spinning around, it's racing around the local high school track. Like time and time again, and I'm outside the track looking at my dad in this cadaverous state wrapped around to a gurney, the speeding around this high school track with an ambulance like right outside of the track. And again, it's a real spooky dream, and it's a quick one. And after maybe three or four times around the track, like I get a really good vision of this near-death face that he had. And boom, I wake up, and again, it's freaky, and I pop up, and I don't know. I've thought a lot about that dream. I do not know what that says about my dad or about our previous lives, but that's an eerie one, so I don't even know what to think of that one. I don't even know if I should have shared that with all of you. So yeah, I do believe you're onto something here, because there have been times, countless times where I think I'll go to a place for the first time, but like you said in this post, like let's say I go to a new city and I'm in town square, like town hall area, and I'll feel like I've been there before, but I know real life that I've never been there. This is my first time. But I just feel an energy, a vibe. Like, I've been here before. Like, I know I've been to this bar. I know I've sat on this stool before. And I don't know what that says. Now you say it's a parallel life. Like, maybe we're living this life awake, and then when we fall asleep, our subconscious, that's a parallel universe. I don't believe that. I don't believe that, like, we're here on Earth and then there's a different version, the same person, same genetics, but on like a different universe. I don't believe that. The reason being is, if you notice, the only people who believe that we're living in a simulation, that this is a matrix and that we're not completely in charge, are healthy people. Just notice that, like, people who are able-bodied, have a good mind, are able to think and process thoughts, those are the ones who will try to convince you that we're living in a simulation or some type of matrix, and that there's like another one of us out there. You'll never see somebody who's has to live their life in a wheelchair, or that is paralyzed, or that is mentally unwell. Like, those are the ones, you'll never hear those people talk about, oh yeah, this is a matrix, it's great, I'm in a wheelchair, and I'm probably in a wheelchair somewhere else. No, it's always, you know, a multi-millionaire who's super successful who will tell you this is a matrix and try to tell you there's some type of aliens that are running everything. So that's why I don't fuck with the parallel universe, but I do fuck with the subconscious. That's telling us something about our past. And I'll just finish saying this. When I was in high school, me and two of my friends, Dan and Phil, we got really into lucid dreamings. And sometimes I'd go down to our library and I would read these books on lucid dreaming. And the three of us we try to train ourselves to have dreams, because you can do so. So you want to, like, if you want to train yourself to have certain dreams, you want to have, like, intense feelings. So a dream that I was able to, like, I was able to control my dreams. So, like, what I mean by that is, like, before I would go to bed, I'd say, I want to have a dream about this. And then I would have that, I would be able to have a dream about that. And one dream I was able to do that with is swimming. Because when you jump in a pool, you know, that shock of hitting the water, it's a very, you feel it. Like, you know, it's in dreams. You don't have smell, or you don't really have, there are certain senses you don't have. But the jumping in water, that is a feeling you do have. So I would tell myself to dream about jumping off a diving board into a pool. And then I could actually get to the point when I was in high school where I could get to the point where I would dream about jumping into pools. So if you're really serious about dreams, you can actually kind of control your subconscious while you're dreaming. But really, like, don't get too worked up, though, about your subconscious. And reason being is because when you're in real life, it's hard to control your emotions when you're here, when you're awake. When whatever state of mind this is when we're awake, think about how much challenging it is to control your emotions. Like, somebody cuts you off on the highway and you gotta go fuck yourself. Like, you're not able to control your road rage. That's when you're awake, when you're conscious. So if you're not able to control yourself then, like, what makes you think you can control your subconscious when you've been jettisoned into dream world? It's nearly an impossible task, although you can do so, you know, to a degree with lucid dreaming. But yeah, I fuck with you. I fuck with you harder with this one. My advice is, you say you're not able to remember your dreams. Keep a notebook right by your bed, right bedside table. And as soon as you wake up, have a pen and just write down what the dream was, and keep a journal and see if any of the dreams end up being the same, and try to, you know, put the puzzle pieces together, and, you know, your puzzle will tell you something about you. Me, I lived a very difficult life in a previous life, war-torn life, and I don't know what happened to my family, but yeah, going to be alone. So, yeah. To everybody who is awake in this real world, go suck a fat one.